Well, good morning, everybody. Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and I very much thank the organizers for getting me over here, for inviting me, and for the opportunity to join the meeting. And actually, also, I had some visits prior to this meeting. So all in all, it has been a very great experience. Well, following the talk of Susan, I'm now focusing on dairy, and I'm also grateful for all the introductory work she did on terminology, so I can skip all that. First of all, I would like to acknowledge collaborators. I didn't do this on my own. It's people from Animal Nutrition Group we work together with, Agrotechnology and Food Sciences, Food Research Institute, many, many students, and various companies in both grass breeding, animal feed manufacturing, dairy co-ops, and many farmers. The outline will be very briefly on dairy products in the diet and some background information on the Netherlands, where I come from. Then the composition of the milk with various cow diets, so how can farmers manipulate that, some strategies for improvement, and then very briefly some topical issues. There's debate ongoing nowadays in Europe. So to start with, I can skip that because it was taken care of very well. I'll immediately go to, my country of origin. It's the northwest corner of the European continent, very maritime climate, very small country. I learned it's almost one third of the size of the state of Ohio and one quarter only of Wisconsin, so tiny. However, some facts. It's, not hot, flat and crowded, but it's cool, flat and crowded. you see quite some population in the western part. So here would be Amsterdam. Maybe some of you have visited Amsterdam or the Netherlands. Yes, at least one. So most people would be living in the west. And actually Wageningen University, it's here, so it's more quiet. And this is the province of Friesland, where the Frisian cows originated. And actually, I was born in this very quiet corner. Now, we have almost 1 million hectares of grasslands, which would be roughly half of the cultivated area. We have 16.4 million inhabitants, which makes up a very crowded place in terms of population density, as you can see. Next to all these people, we have 1.5 million dairy cows, which is our biggest commodity, dairy, a lot of cheese export. And this is produced on just over 20,000 dairy farms. Our dairy farms typically would be family farms with, on average, less than 100 cows, although there has been a change towards bigger farms recently, especially the last 10 years. Also, our cows would typically be on pasture, and if I say pasture, it would be perennial ryegrass, because we are a very maritime climate, as you can see, with adequate rainfall all year round. So we can have excellent perennial ryegrass grass growth. And just some background facts. Beginning of the century, the milk production per cow, it was only 2,500 kilogram. It increased very much, and you can see that now we are almost 8,000 kilogram. But many things have changed along, so you can also see a dramatic decrease in the number of dairy farms, especially in more recent years. And this is an interesting graph, I think, as it shows dramatic changes, particularly here if you look at the changes between 1956 and now. In fat content, there has been a very, very much increase, and also in protein, but much more so in fat content. And I also learned that these contents are much higher than what you have here in the United States of America. So many more milk solids per kilogram, per liter of milk. And this has been due to a combination of things, one being animal breeding, selection, also feeding and farm management changes. And if we then plot the fat-to-protein ratio for this time span, We can see that particularly here from the mid-70s onward until roughly 1990, see a dramatic increase here due to some things, one being the introduction of milk quota, one other being the introduction of corn. Because before the 1970s, it was not possible to grow corn because of our northern latitude and the rather short season for getting, well, corn right for the silage stage. But since then, due to plant breeding, new cultivars became available, and now corn is cultivated mainly in the southern eastern part, but throughout the country it's possible. So to summarize farming practice, bigger farms we see nowadays with more cows per farm, cows being higher productive, and also there is a trend towards more indoor housing. As farms grow bigger, the logistics is getting more difficult to get these animals out on pasture. The trends with feeding, we do see along with that less grass, more concentrate and also more corn, silage. And with breeding, yes, less cattle diversity and mainly Holstein Friesian breeds, very high productive. Now the dairy industry, they wonder, they are concerned about this fatty acid content, and at the moment the annual average would be just over 70%, but there is a seasonal fluctuation, as I will show in the next slide. The Dutch dairies are interested, for reasons well explained, if this can be modified. So we took a look at that. Just some background on these fatty acids. The short and medium chain fatty acids can be synthesized endogenously by animals, but these essential long fatty acids have to be ingested. And Susan talked about these two, linolenic and linoleic. Now, typically, linolenic 18-3 is the major one on grass, and so sources are found in forage and concentrate feed. Some effects of season and diet, and I will be showing a lot of data on CLA. Well, it was well explained. It's the cis9-trans-11 isomer, or the rumenic acid, which is really the major CLA isomer in milk. It would be like over 80-85%. And it's also correlated very well to total unsaturated fat in milk. Now, some data from Poland clearly showing that, hey, in summer and autumn, the concentration would be higher than in winter. And also, total mixed ration versus pasture showed a big, big increase. So we took a more close look, and we got hold on some data from the Dutch farms, pool data, taken monthly, starting here in August, September, and so on. And CLA content plotted here. We clearly can see that from November onward till March, the level is low. This would be the period when all the cows would be indoor. Our winter diet would typically be grass silage, pre-wilted grass silage. And then more recently, together with some corn silage, at least in some parts of the country, at variable proportions of that, and concentrate. Then from April onwards, grass growth would start. Some farmers would already turn out their animals, and so we see the highest levels in summertime, when most of the cows would be on pasture. Actually, 85% of our cows would be on pasture for a longer or shorter period of the year. We split this pool data actually into regional data. And this graph interestingly shows that the west and the north, in blue and green part of the country, had much higher levels, particularly in the growing season, than milk collected from farms in the east and the south, very consistently. And we were intrigued, and because these were quite big differences actually. And, taking a look at soil types then in the Netherlands, we do see that, the green here is clay, yellow would be sand, and already we can see that here in the south and eastern part, there's a lot of sandy soils. The blue and purple here would be peat or muck, organic soils, and that is really the traditional areas where cheese was made centuries ago. Actually, you all know Gouda cheese, I think. Well, Gouda is a town, and the town is just located here in our so-called Green Heart, which explains, yeah, that it always was very, very important for cheese. Also, Edam, town of Edam, would be located in this area. So, a variety of soils. And here I have kind of summarized it. So the yellow again, sand. This would be more or less forested. So no dairy going on there. Here, the left one shows the land use, and we can see that the yellow, the dairy, actually has expanded from these traditional areas in the Green Heart and also in Friesland to the sandy soils, particularly after the Second World War, with the invention of nitrogen fertilizer. These soils also have become available for pasturing. So, very much intensification has taken place there. However, these sandy soils are more prone to drought, although we are temperate still, it can become a bit dry and warm. So maize, corn silage, when corn became available for cultivation, was accepted a lot by these farmers in the east and south. And typically, what we see there, now coming back to this picture, the explanation is that in the west and north, we can see on these clay and these muck organic soils that there's mainly grazed grass, cows being out on pasture day and night, or yeah, part of the day, but a lot of grass in the diet, and also in the winter diet, mainly grass silage. Whereas in the south and east, on the sand, less grazing, typically only during daytime, shorter grazing hours per day, and usually always corn silage supplemented at night. So a very mixed, different ration. Well then, these monthly data, I also plotted here the CLA content that I showed you earlier versus the total unsaturated fatty acid content. And again, we see that it's quite a nice relationship, so they go together. The blue in summer, higher than in winter. Interestingly, also, we had some organic milk samples, and in summertime, we can see they are even higher, whereas in wintertime, there's no difference, because it would be indoors anyway. The reason that is higher, it is mainly because organic farmers are obliged to have grass on pasture. That is also unlike the situation in the US. I understood that here, just the use of certified organic feed is sufficient to have the label of organic produce, whereas our consumers would be convinced that buying organic products, organic milk, guarantees that cows would be on pasture, and actually not just for stretching their legs, but for having a significant intake of grass. So, in addition, on organic farms, on average, the milk production level would be a little lower, which means that the energy demand of the cows could be covered more easily with a grass-only or largely grass-only based diet, in contrast to very high productive cows who have difficulty to just satisfy their needs only from grass. Then we compared some data in our lab. We got hold on samples from a different origin. And again, CLA content from farmers having the cows indoor in day and night, so 15% of our farmers would do that. Typically, this 0.3 winter level was found in the month of August. Farmers with here cows out, only during daytime, like 8 hours, much higher levels. But again, day and night beat them by far. And some samples from the southwest of Ireland were even higher, up to over 1.5. But in Wageningen, in our own experiments, we were also able to realize that with high productive dairy cows, only 3 kilograms of concentrate per day. But our management was such that these cows had a very high herbage allowance of leafy perennial ryegrass, well fertilized. So lots of very good quality herbage on offer. Showing here that for farmers, I mean, it's just by management, there's lots of options to modify dramatically levels in the milk if they would want so. Now, when we did this in some years ago, there was no differentiation and it was not measured routinely, so why would farmers do so? This has changed, and I'll tell in a minute. First, maybe some other data from individual cows. Here again, CLA levels showing that grass on pasture, that's the green bars here, had very, very high levels, some individual cows even up to 3. But when they were turned indoors, and this is on the corn silage diet, even after 2 days, we see a dramatic drop in all of the animals in this CLA content. And, well, within a week, it was, well, at a very much lower level. So this very rapid change, well, we were quite impressed with that. So you can also have very fast effects. The other interesting thing is, of course, that we do see quite big animal-to-animal differences, and there's also scope for genetic improve by breeding and selection, but, of course, this would take a much, much more time. But both are interesting routes. Then we collected farmers' data, and in one region I plotted here the CLA content from milk from the same farms collected in February, the blue, so that's all indoors, and in September, when partly at least would be on grass, and against fat content. And we see that fat content in winter is very much higher. It's quite a lot of variation, very low CLA concentrations, whereas in September, much more variation for CLA, and also some farms being able to realize real high concentrations. Now we were curious, what was the difference? What was the secret? Why, for example, this farm was so much higher than these, if there would be underlying management practices? So we sent out questionnaires, and we were able to, we got some responses, able then to relate this to what animals actually did in terms of pasturing, which was the major factor. So here we see the September versus the February content, and we can really see that the farmers who had day and night pasturing had much, much higher levels in September, clearly, than cows with just daytime grazing, and a few farms who had them only on silage were much lower. So, yeah, this supported our hypothesis. Another set of data showed the same thing, actually, in other region, showing here the level in August versus the level in June. The blue, day and night grazing. Oh, this is summer feeding, and then the central, the yellow. It's going, it's only 8-hour grazing, so the intermediate level. So really, the hours of grazing is by far the main factor for this composition in milk fatty acids. So what can farmers do then? Well, in summertime, with this positive effect of grazing, the more stocking, the more grazing, the highest concentration. We also saw a negative effect, I didn't show that, but of adding corn silage, and we could see that the more corn silage was added, the lower the contents. Now then going to the forage, because that's the base, the substrates are produced here for this biohydrogenation going into the animal. In summertime we have access to fresh grass and also legumes, herbs with a high fatty acid content. In wintertime, on silage or hay, the levels are much lower. Now, these herbage lipids, where are they found? Mainly in the green leaves, actually the leaf blades, which also means we thought that within the canopy there's a gradient. I come to that later. And which fatty acids do we actually find in grass? Well, it is mainly unsaturated and largely this alpha-linolenic C18-3, which is just a very, the good one, which also means that consumers can also just eat fresh vegetables to increase their intake of alpha-linolenic acid. So it's also good to bear that in mind. Also, walnuts or so are quite a good source of alpha-linolenic acid. The grass, the stage in which we look at, it's crucial. We have here strips of like 2 meters of different cultivars, different varieties. This one would be a leafy one. You can see this one is early heading one, already lots of stems. And we did analyze levels there, and clearly in the leafy vegetative tissue, they are by far highest. Then we wanted to see if by agronomy, farmers could actually manipulate these contents. And we did an experiment with adding nitrogen fertilizer levels, so 100 intermediate level and nil here in blue. We plotted alpha-linolenic acid content in the grass versus the protein content. And clearly, with more nitrogen, you have a higher protein content. However, we had not expected this nice linear relationship between the two, because protein, that is there's a lot of nitrogen, and there's no nitrogen in the fatty acid. However, it is in the membranes surrounding the chloroplast. So very convenient to have this relation, because now we could more easily kind of screen just the protein to get an idea. And a second factor we looked at is the days of regrowth, so 20 versus 27 days, basically like 3 to 4 week regrowth. And we can see that these the younger material, the solid symbols, always had higher levels than the older material, well, which is also evident. But again, it was a very nice relation with alpha-linolenic. Now, these were very low levels. It was done in spring, and we repeated that actually later in the season, getting to even much higher levels. Of course, this is just experimental. Nobody would put on 100 kilograms of nitrogen in October, but just to get the range, you could see that it's a very robust relationship. Also, there's cultivar effects. Here we actually calculated really the quantities. So these were stall-fed animals with freshly chopped grass. We measured intake, and we measured actually the grams per day of CLA in the milk versus the grams per day of alpha-linolenic acid ingested with the stall-fed fresh grass. Nice linear relationship, also a cultivar difference. And this was really due to a higher concentration in the forage in one of the cultivars, Barlett. We were not able to relate this to other characteristics. So the heading date was similar, chemical composition was similar. So actually we don't know why this is. In another experiment, we did have grass cultivars differing quite a lot in chemical composition, in sugar content. And there we did not see these differences. So this is still an area for further research. Get a hold on that. Now I'm moving towards the animal again, the interface between the plant and the cow and the milk. We were curious to see if we fed fresh grass indoors. We had measured somewhat lower levels compared to grazed animals, but there's always this confounding effect of housing and so. So we had the opportunity, in autumn this is, to compare groups of cows. So we made 4 pairs of 2 cows, and one cow was able to graze, the other got just freshly cut grass just 1 hour before the cows were turned in. We would move them at noon, so every day they got a new plot with just enough grass for 24 hours. And it was a changeover design, so we did this 1 week every day, and then we changed the treatments. And we thought, well, the grass is similar. However, we did find differences in favor of grazing in the CLA content in the milk. And animals were milked here outdoor in a little mobile milking parlor. So. This is the result. So starting with, on the left, with grazing, we see that animals starting with grazing and then the next week having cutting, at the end of the next week, all showed a decline in CLA in their milk, whereas the group of cows starting with this cut grass and then having grazed grass the second week all showed this increase. So very, very consistent. And this made us think, hey, what could be the reason? Because we hadn't expected this really. But we think it's a variety of reasons. First of all, the grazing cow has many more selection possibilities. The cow is able to manipulate with the tongue and the head and pick off the leafy parts, tear them off. But also, they would start grazing at the top of the canopy where the youngest and most protein-rich leaf blades can be found, as we know, with the highest levels of alpha-linolenic acid. Also, it is fresh plant material each bite, whereas if you cut it and bring it indoors, it's been being there for either 6 or maybe 24 hours, so it doesn't get any better. There can also be changes in the contents in the grass, but these were not enough to explain the big differences we found. So also animal behavioral differences like bite size and rate play a role, and we also think this could impact the particle size, the speed at which particle size is reduced, things like that, to do maybe with passage rate. Next to that, also the behavior during the 24 hours is very different, because grazing cows would graze in the afternoon and in the evening mainly. We know that then also the sugar content of grass is much higher, so they would have kind of just a different quality diet. So interesting data. Well, to test our hypothesis about this vertical gradient, we also looked at the effect of grazing. We would typically have a 4-day rotational system, and meaning that the first days the cows are turned in, they have a lot of choice, and then the next day, well, it's pre-grazed, and so gradually they have to go down into the canopy. Now we had two groups of cows, one being the so-called starters, who got fresh pasture daily, but then every day. So we moved them every day to a fresh piece of pasture, and then the group of followers, they followed just one day later, so they daily had pre-grazed grass. And then again, after 1 week, the treatments were changed. And I express this here relative to the starting level within each animal to level out for individual differences due to animal factors. So 100% is the initial thing. Then, after 1 week, having been a starter with daily having access to ungrazed grass, we saw this 20% increase. And then the next week, when these cows got the pre-grazed grass, quite a dramatic drop in CLA in their milk. And the other group having the reverse treatment showing exactly the opposite. So, this is a very, very nice outcome, kind of confirming our hypothesis. Now, for the industry and for the farmers, what's the scope for improvement? Well, there's quite a lot. Animal feed and feeding system are very important to modify milk fat content and fatty acid profile. And as I said, in summertime, well, allowance of grazed protein-rich grass is a very powerful tool. However, in winter, we have to think of other ways. One way could be the ratio of grass silage to corn silage in favor of grass. That would give higher levels of CLA in the milk, because corn would be 50% starch, and there's no precursor. Yeah, there's no alpha-linolenic in the starch. The other route would be to change the concentrate composition, and quite a lot has been done here, of course, with adding unsaturated fatty acid to the concentrates, like linseed. However, there is an added cost for that, and also there is a limit to how much fat you can feed to ruminants in the form of concentrate. And, well, we've seen the process of biohydrogenation. Clearly, the effect of feeding linseed does have powerful effects. Saturated fatty acid content goes down. Unsaturated fatty acid content goes up. Omega-3, which is available quite a lot in linseed, would go up, and also CLA. And now the dairy industries, actually, they encourage farmers nowadays to produce milk with more unsaturated fatty acids. And this has been a very big change, because when I started this work in 2000, 2001, then the big dairy co-op said, no way, milk, we are a co-op, all milk is equal, all members are equal, the price is going to be equal, we do not want to have a separate collection or whatever, it's a lot of cost, and we add value in the factory, and that's it. However, this changed a lot, so they saw the data, they also saw that there's a lot of concern from the general public. People are watching, seeing the cows, or, well, being concerned that cows are less grazing. also quite a lot of concern for healthy product, grass-based products. So actually, we had big changes. We have two major dairies, Friesland and Campina. Actually, they merged in 2008 to become one very big dairy co-op. Like 85% of the farmers would be member of this new dairy co-op. They introduced a branded milk based on milk from grass-fed cows, and in addition with linseed in wintertime. Selected farmers could join this, so in some regions this milk is separated apart. It's going to a special plant who produces this milk, and it's well sold at a higher price. And the question is, of course, if consumers are going to maintain buying this this product, but clearly it was a very nice result. There's also much awareness now of grass-fed milk. There's a logo introduced that on the package. Consumers can see that. Yeah, lots of commercials going on to just well point attention towards that. Again, the discussion that Susan mentioned about this trans fatty acid still, although we know that the trans is very different trans, still marketeers are a bit reluctant, because we know that with grass fed, not only the CLA, but only also the vaccine goes up. Although we as scientists know, and we also try to get that message across, say it's really different, still for marketing people, the word trans, it's very suspect. So yeah, it's really needed to have some more specified terminology there, I think, to also to promote grass-fed products. Because the alternative ways, like feeding all kind of protected fats, etc., it's much more expensive, and one can also ask if this is a sustainable way. In addition, since the outcome of a report like Livestock's Long Shadow, dairies are very concerned, is there a license to produce and keep producing dairy, especially in a so densely populated country as ours? They are also worried for the carbon footprint. They look nowadays very cautious at energy consumption, greenhouse gas emissions. They want to see where all this energy is used and the gases are produced. Methane is a big issue now, and that's all other forces, maybe not always in favor of grass. And the other big issue being animal health and welfare. Lameness is a very big concern. And there, again, grass, pasture-fed animals have less problems with lameness, so that is, again, favorable. So it is really not really black and white, but there's a lot going on, and, well, it was nice to share this with you. And then to sum up, I think what is needed is, just more awareness of consumers, and especially these beneficial health effects. It should be communicated. However, there should also be more solid evidence for these health claims. One can nowadays it's not allowed to easily to put on the package that it's more healthy for you. Of course, you can say it has higher content of this and that, and then hope that the consumer makes the association with positive health effects of that compound. But that's an area for more research, I think. This nomenclature of trans fatty acids needs improvement, and clearly marketing and production of improved products, it's the major thing. I mean, the chain has to be pulled, we say, so from you can't push it really. We of course try to give the underlying data and tell, okay, how can we do it, how can farmers do it, but if the marketing people are not pushing this and promoting it, then there's no future for the product. So I think the next speaker will go further there. Some things that, of course, are a worry with us, it's the trend of keeping cows more and more indoors and, replacing grazed grass by silage as farms grow very big, especially in combination with robotic milking. It's just more logistically more difficult to have the cows walk out on pasture just because of the distance. And in general, of course, high concentrate feed costs, it's a big concern to the farmer. Farmers have been facing a lot of fluctuation recently in prices. First they went up, but last year they were very, very low. And yeah, so therefore again, grazed grass is the cheapest feed. And well, we'll see what the future brings. So thank you for listening to me. And if there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer. And background information and also access to publications can be found through this website, www.grassandforage.wur.nl. So thank you.
Right. Do we have any questions for Anyo? All right, in the back there, last row.
Again, like a question I asked the previous speaker, if you have any data on vitamin K, or if you still have your samples, you can go back to those samples and analyze the vitamin K.
Sorry, I have to disappoint you. We didn't look at that, and I think most of these samples, they wouldn't be available at the moment. So. But if you were interested, of course, it would be possible to kind of create new samples. So maybe you could contact me if you really had an interest in analyzing samples. Thank you.
In the back there, Dennis.
What does the pasteurization process do or change with regards to the fatty acid profile?
Yes, so the question is if the processing, like pasteurization, would change the fatty acid profile. No. Actually, there are studies both from the Netherlands, also from France. It does not change, not in pasteurized, even not in sterilized milk, not in cheese, meaning that the concentration in the raw milk, the raw farm milk, it's exactly the same as in all these dairy products that the consumer would purchase. Yeah.
Right here.
Yes, the question, the nitrogen balance on the farms, that is of course, yeah, no. We, especially with highly fertilized grass, you would have an unbalance. So too much protein and a lot of that would go lost as urea, nitrogen. So therefore, indeed, farmers are adopting, including more energy to improve the energy to protein ratio in the diets. Therefore, corn silage has become quite popular. That is one of the other things. Clearly, if you have only grass, also milk urea content would also be a bit higher. Yeah, true. The other idea was to maybe look at high sugar grasses to have in the same grass also a slightly better balance. We tested that. We also have some papers from PhD students on that, but we were not very impressed with the promised increases of the high sugar varieties. So
is there a loss in milk production due to high nitrogen or high protein in the forage tissue?
Not so much a loss of milk production, as well as that you just have a lot of excreta.
But is there an energy cost to the animal to process that nitrogen?
Yes, there would also be some energy cost. Yeah, that's right.
Back in the corner.
Dr. Dinsky works. Are you aware of any charts or research studies that show as you incrementally add more grain to the cow's diet, if it's on 100% pasture all the time, 24 hours a day, you see a change in omega-3 fatty acid ratios or CLA ratios as grain is included into a cow's ration?
I'm not clear if I got you right. So you say in a grass-based diet, if you increase the amount of grain fed?
If you have, let's say, a feed bunker mobile sitting in a pasture,
yes.
The cow is always in a lush green environment, but you supplement by adding a little bit of grain to your diet, do you see a change in omega-3 fatty acid ratios and or CLA ratios as you incrementally some of these breeds we have a little bit, they're superstars. They want to have a little more energy to keep their body conditions intact. They suffer a little bit on grasses. And to increase the energy, where do you see the break? Where do you see a break in the transition to grass?
Yeah, thanks for the comment. We don't have the detailed individual animal data there. We have data just on a herd basis, showing then that indeed if you increase the amount of concentrate on a grass-based pasture, then yeah, in general the trend is that this unsaturated fatty acid level goes down a bit. But clearly the most or fresh cows or very high productive cows individually would need a bit more. For that we would have to go into individual animal data, and actually I didn't look at it personally, but yeah.
Another question? I will say just real quick, at the Grass Finished Beef Conference last year, we actually had a presentation on supplementation and grass finishing systems, and you may find that interesting to watch that presentation. I don't want to disappoint you, but there's just not a lot of data out there on that. But we certainly need to look at types of supplements and the amount of supplements and diets. So. You can go to, if you search Virginia Tech Southern Piedmont Research Station, our website will come up, and it's on there. It's a video. So, any other, Ray?
With your data, is there consumer demand for grass-fed milk? You mentioned the shift toward more indoor feeding.
Mm-hmm.
Are consumers wanting to have more grass-fed?
Consumers are surely interested. However, there is a price difference, and now with the recession, of course, it's difficult. We always say that if consumers are questioned, then they would fill in the form. Yes, of course, we want to promote healthy food and so. But if they are in the shop and they see the price difference, they behave a bit different from what they have said on paper. Nevertheless, there sure is a demand for that. There's also quite some growing awareness, and this special brand has also a market share. So, sure, the consumer appreciates it. Yeah, both for reasons of animal welfare, but also because of the health claims of the product. So it's both working in a positive manner. Yeah.
All right. Well, we've got a. Thank you, Anya. Let's thank Anya for that wonderful presentation.